Welcome back to the Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2017. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Good to be back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year indeed.
Guess what, man?
What?
The Bombers not suspended this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to you being a little bit more chipper about the football if your Supercoach team's not going too well, and I knew that that was getting a drag on you last year, so very excited for this season.
To have Heppel and Job and Hurley and Hooker and the others back is going to be very exciting, and I'm pumped for round one.
I'm looking forward to a very interesting season coming up. I think last year was a very tight tussle for the top eight, and this year I think will be no different. So, yeah, bound to be a great season, Mark. I think a little bit more clarity over who the top teams would be would help for Supercoach selections in terms of determining.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the fun, isn't it, though? Like, there are so many teams that could make the top four or the top eight, and a lot of good teams are going to miss out this year.
Yeah, certainly will. All right. For this show, Mark, for our first show back, we're actually just going to make it a fairly quick one. Just wanted to touch base with you. I know I'm still in the preliminary stages of picking my first team. There's a lot of players returning from injury this year that'll be fairly tempting buys.
Yeah, especially in the midfield. You got sort of the Mark Murphys, probably get sucked in there again, Beams and Swallow, those sort of guys. Like, huge questions that we'll be answering over the preseason. Like, do you take Dangerfield at over 700,000? Can Ablett get back to any form? Will you take the backline really expensive players like Heath Shaw and Doherty and Simpson? And will you go for a really expensive ruck combo, or will you try and save some money there? And which of the up-and-comers are you going to take in the forward line? So there's heaps and heaps to discuss this preseason, mate.
Yeah, and I'm not too sure where we're going to start our show. I think normally we start off the positional shows in the midfield, Mark, but this year there's a lot of question marks in that area too, so it'll be interesting to see which one we tackle first. For this show, Mark, we're going to look at talking about a few of the rule changes that happened for the AFL game more generally and any implications to Supercoach. I'm going to discuss very briefly buys in rounds 11, 12 and 13 and what that means as compared to last year, because it was shifted back last year. So I think 13, 14, 15, if memory serves me correctly. And then we might have a little talk about a few players here and there and top four predictions if we get to it. So, Mark, let's start off by talking about some of these rule changes. The first one's the rush behinds.
I guess the backline players are going to be bringing the ball back in more and keeping it going. So maybe there's some chances for some ineffective plays there amongst the backmen, or more chance for goals from the forwards. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, and hopefully they do actually enforce it, because they've sort of talked about this before and then they always end up backing off.
Mm. I know last year there was a lot of forward drive coming out of the back line, and that quick transition really being driven from all the way in the back line was a big sort of centerpiece for a lot of teams last year. I know Doherty and Simpson carved up a lot of points at Carlton doing that, and they never seemed to get the tag as well, which was very interesting. So there could be continuation of that sort of theme and more backline points to be scored in 2017 as well. Next rule, Mark, head high. Will this have any impact on Supercoach scoring?
Well, I guess Geelong are screwed, aren't they? They got both the Selwoods in their team. So hopefully it means a lot less free kicks for the Selwood brothers, and Geelong probably miss out on the eight as a result.
I was hoping you weren't going to go there, Mark, but no, I don't think there's any significant Supercoach ramifications for this one. You would assume, though, players adapt to it, and so if they're getting sort of pinged for ducking too much, then they'll just stop doing that, and you'll see the free kicks against drop off as well. So I wouldn't expect a huge impact from that one.
Both of those rule changes are to keep the ball moving, and that's going to be just good for the spectacle, I think, but it's going to test the fitness of the players having less stoppages.
It would be interesting what that continues to do to the forward line, because it's become a lot more dynamic and it's been really difficult to be a key position forward over the last couple of years especially. Last rule probably has the most direct impact in terms of Supercoach scoring. That's a third man up. That's no longer allowed, Mark. So you just got to nominate your one ruckman that's going to go up and jump for the ball, and nobody else can have a ping at it. That's going to hurt Mark
Blitzarv.
Interesting
that, the player that this one most affects is also a Geelong player, Mark Blitzarv. So you'd think it would undermine his usefulness a bit. I know that he's still a good player, but one of his strengths was definitely going as that extra ruckman wandering around the ground. So the research suggests that the third man up doesn't actually clear the ball more and doesn't clear the ball wider. But I know that some of the ruckmen, Leuenberger was talking this week that he expects that the ball will be cleared from stoppages a lot less in distance from the stoppage. So the ruckman will be just hitting the ball close to them. So I guess it's going to advantage those in and under inside midfielders and give the genuine ruckman, so the Gorns and the Goldstein sort of type, more opportunity to score points because they're not going to have someone jumping over the top and stealing those plus fives off them.
That's a good consideration, Mark. I hadn't actually thought about that one. It doesn't just impact the guys who used to go for third man ups, but it affects traditional ruck scoring as well. And maybe there's more traditional tap ruckmen that we've avoided, I think, especially in the last couple of years, with a little bit more of emergence of, you know, the Stefan Martin types that can score around the ground. We might move back to maybe a Sanderlands type being a little bit more attractive, being able to win a little bit more taps.
Yeah.
Any other rule changes in terms of Supercoach itself or champion data scoring of Supercoach points? I know some years we get a little bit of change in that department.
I don't think that there's not anything that's been announced that I've seen. Champion data doesn't always release their information this early. It's good to see a bit of stability because some years, I mean, we have seen a lot of change over the last, 8, 9 years that we've been doing this, mate? But it's good to see a bit of stability from season to season sometimes and just stabilize a little bit.
Yeah. The only unfortunate part, Mark, is the thing that I was hoping they would change from a Supercoach prize point of view, they didn't change, and that's the league competition. They've aptly renamed it this year to be the league creation competition, so it's quite clear what they're trying to drive out of that cash prize. So it's still $9,000 being split by the league that wins after one round of scoring. So $9,000 cash they're giving out, $500 for each participant.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess there's only a couple of groups that would ultimately be competing for the league prize if it was at the end of the season. So I guess I can understand that from a commercial perspective, even if it doesn't agree with what we would like.
Mm. So let's move to talking about the buys now quickly, Mark. Buys in round 11, 12, and 13. I don't know about you, but I'm actually quite looking forward to that one. I think last year, the upgrade cycle got affected quite a bit because you're trying to turbo upgrade and complete your upgrades as soon as you could to maximize point gains. But then there was still this balancing act of trying to retain some upgrades to be left for the round 13, 14, 15 buy period so that you could upgrade around the buy. So it was a tricky mix that I didn't quite appreciate. I'm looking forward to sort of being able to leverage the buys again to trade around them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it suits the upgrade process far more to have them that little bit early. And it's going to be really interesting to see the balance this year with the end of season buy still in place and whether last year was just an anomaly that we didn't have a lot of injuries at the end of the year or restings, or whether the end of year buy actually had a huge impact on that. And so how many trades are you going to need for those last few weeks? I think that's going to be probably the biggest thing this year that people are going to be working out, is how many to save for the end of the year, because was last year a new trend or not?
The other factor I think that plays into that is how close is the competition, because last year I think a big factor was not many teams could even afford to rest just because of how precarious the ladder position was right until the last round. So hopefully, we were talking about it being another tight year this year, hopefully that eventuates, Mark, because I think from a Supercoach point of view, it's certainly a lot better that coaches don't have the option of being able to lose a game and therefore rest 10 of their players prior to a final series.
I do have a bit of a feeling that the Giants might be able to rest some of their players late in the season if they feel like it.
Yeah, that does take us quite nicely to the next topic, Mark. Top four predictions, club-wise. So, obviously, the best player in each club or the best Supercoach players tend to score well no matter what team they're playing for. But for players, let's say, 3 to 12 at a football club, it certainly helps when they're playing for a winning team as opposed to a losing team from a Supercoach scoring point of view. A winning team tends to get a majority of the pie. They tend to kick more goals, have more possessions. And so we tend to look for players that come from a club that's winning more games than they're losing. Who do you think will be in the top four this year, Mark, as a early guess for 2017, and are you going to try and pick any increased concentration from any clubs? I'm guessing Giants will be on top of your list, Mark.
Yeah, the Giants are on top of the list. I think realistically, I need to do some more research on the draw, because that's just a huge factor every year. Like, I think Geelong probably overperformed a bit last year because of that. They had a really easy draw, the first time they've had one in a long time. And so I think at the moment I'd say Giants, Sydney, Crows and Bulldogs would be pretty close to the favourites for the top four. But again, did I mention that the Bombers are back? Did I mention Heppel into our midfield? With little Zachy Merritt playing alongside him, and Hurley and Hooker, and Bombers probably favourite for the premiership, or is that a bit far?
I love the enthusiasm, Mark. It was missing last year, so I think those are fairly good predictions. Obviously, I have my own Cats hopefully making the top four as well. Giants and Bulldogs right up there. I'm not sure if I'm as confident in Adelaide as potentially you are. I guess Sydney would probably be another one that I think will do fairly decently.
I mean, they're losing Tom Mitchell, but to have people like Heaney and Mills improving in that team is going to be pretty significant for them.
All right, Mark, so to round up this week's show, and it's just, again, a short one, we'll go into more depth the next show once we've had a little bit more time to have a play with our teams. But, Mark, if you had to pick two or three players that you're most excited to pick in your team for season 2017, who would they be at this early stage?
I think we raised a couple of them early on, and Fife, having Fife in my team, very excited about that. I think very good chance Dyson Heppel makes my team. Hopefully it would be very fun as a Bombers supporter, and there's just, as you've seen, a little bit of excitement there. And I think Luke Dalhouse at 520,000 is just absolutely irresistible.
I'm pretty excited to pick up Caddy in the forward line. I'm sad to see him leave from Geelong, but I think a lot of the strong forward options that were available in the forward line last year are no longer available in the forward line this year. So it appears that based on the 2016 average, the highest averager that's left in the forward line from last year is Nick Riewoldt at 101. Then comes Josh Kennedy at 98, and then Lukey Dalhouse at 96. So normally you tend to have at least a few blokes starting in the hundreds, Mark. But this year, there's been quite a lot of those forward mids moved back into the midfield and unavailable for selection in the forward line. So I'm excited to have Caddy potentially. And I think he's going to play a bit more time in the midfield, apparently, with Dusty being flagged for a potential move back up forward, or spending a little bit more time back up forward. So I think Caddy could be a good one.
Decent. I think the good exciting part is, like, picking Caddy and Heaney, that's like our traditional approach. That's like pick two guns that are going to be moving into the midfield and going to be superstars. Like, that they're exciting sort of players to have in your team.
Yeah. In the midfield, it'll be interesting to consider Gary Ablett and the pressures that he potentially has lifted off his shoulders now that he's no longer the captain, and whether or not he can translate that into a winning formula. At this stage, Mark, I'm still tempted to pick Gary Ablett and hoping that he shows people up and can actually turn around a little bit of form. I know last year wasn't a brilliant season for him. And the other one, Mark, Taylor Adams in the back line, averaged 97 last year, and to have a def mid that is on the up in terms of career trajectory is very exciting. I know we talk about the back line being a place for sort of the older relics in the AFL game. It tends to be an older back line over the last few years, especially in terms of the high scoring players. So I'll be excited to pick a young backman premium for once. That'll be a good change.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting over the preseason. One of the themes might be that plenty of choices in the back line, midfield, and even in the rucks, but the forward line is where it's probably a bit more scant for choice, and maybe where there's more opportunity to pick someone a bit different.
Thinking about going with Buddy this year then, Mark, with slimmer choices, does he all of a sudden become more attractive?
At the moment, no. At the moment, I've got four premium forwards in Dalhouse, Caddy, Heaney and Paddy Ryder, and yeah, pretty happy with that start. Like, I know that it's a long, long time till the season starts, but very happy to have all four of those guys in my team.
How much is Paddy Ryder?
418,000, mate. And with Lobie proving to be shit, Ryder should be the number one ruck this year. And he is a really good tap ruckman, and so will benefit from no third man up. And I think he'll have point to prove, and Port might improve a little bit. And yeah, as long as he can return after a year off in good form, I think he could have a pretty good season.
The last time he was available for selection, Mark, he was on my never again list after a disastrous 2015 season in my team. So I'm not too sure whether I should be picking him this season, but that's a pretty attractive price point. I think I paid like $520 for Ryder.
Probably about that time, he was in my never again after the way that he left the Bombers. But I don't know, bit of time, bit of distance, and maybe don't hate him as much anymore.
Yeah. Not tempted on Degoe again, mate?
Look, I think it's ridiculous. I don't know whether I could pick him, but yes, kind of. I think probably the main reason I wouldn't is that Collingwood do have a really, really deep midfield. So where is midfield minutes going to come from is a huge question. Other than that, hearing him be interviewed over the preseason, he has talked about the fact that he forgot why he was in the team and what his strengths were. And he definitely didn't have a good season last year, but I don't think that's a long-term knock on him as a player. Sometimes early in your career, especially your second season, you just don't fire.
All right, Mark, I think that's enough of a chat for our first quick session back. Do you have anything else to sort of mention to our listeners before we sign off?
I think I forgot to mention that Dyson Heppel's back. Pretty excited about that. And looking forward to this season, mate. Yeah.
So I think we'll have one more show before we start on the positional plays. So we might talk about sort of first picked from an early season point of view. I'm looking forward to the preseason shows, Mark. They tend to be quite enjoyable to do and talk about. And I know that's when we really get good engagement out of our listeners as well. So looking forward to a good preseason with you, mate.
Yep, me too.
So we're going to leave you listeners with a little snippet from our Patreon exclusive season review that we did at the end of last year. We talked about lessons learned, and I think the season review can often get lost a little bit because sort of interest in Supercoach tends to wane by the time he gets to round 23, but I think it's quite a useful exercise before you start picking your team this year to look back at last year and try and recap on the lessons learned. So with that, we'll leave you with a snippet of our Patreon exclusive season review, and don't forget, this year we'll be opening up our Patreon campaign again very shortly. So if you want access to the full version of that, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/supercoachcoach. And from as little as $1 a week, you can support us and get access to little extras like these, Mark.
Yeah, I think we had a couple of guests on the show last year at the end of the year looking at their seasons and getting their brilliant insights for how their seasons went. And I think that reflecting on that would be very useful going into this season.
Hmm. And of course, I took the chocolates last year. So it's always good to recap on that, Mark.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, and with that, we'll catch you guys next week. See ya.
See ya.
Top lesson learnt was the question Jack left off with, and I think that's a good one to pick up from. So, Faz?
Well, I don't have anything anywhere near as insightful as Jack. Obviously, given the results, you probably knew that already. The one I had noted down here was don't be a hipster, because I think I tried to be a little bit too unique. You know, I didn't want to pick the team that everybody was going for. Yeah. And that just really bit me in the bum. That's how I ended up with guys like Seedsman in my team. And I even had Matthew Cruiser as my ruckman, just because I didn't want to have the exact same team that you see in all the forums and going around the web.
I completely get that because, mate, I picked Wines and Crouch at the end of the day for the exact same reason. Like, the rest of my team is bloody cookie cutter.
Mm.
I'm just going to take a little bit of a unique pick. Let's differentiate myself against Mark. And when Crouchy scores a bunch, I'll be laughing. Do not think that way.
No. I think that you're wrong, Marcus. I think the way that you approach this year is exactly how you should approach it. You should pick a basically cookie cutter team, but have two players that are more uniquely yours that you're going to be barracking for. And I know that it can backfire and it ends up with you having a unique problem rather than a unique benefit. But I think that's absolutely how you should be playing this game. It's where you're going to get an edge one day. It's not going to work every year, but it will eventually.
I guess I did. The player that I left out in order to have the Wines-Crouch combo was Fife. So that was sort of the unique angle that I took. But I think if I'm going to do that again next time, I'll just take a premium a step down, but who's clearly still a premium, like a Luke Parker type, and not take that mid-price risk on wines. I think you're right, Mark. You should take a risk, and not picking Fife was probably a decent risk for me to start with. But then I think I took it too far by just like bringing in poor mid-prices, which are just a trap.
I think wines and Parker probably like 10k difference at the start of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, things could have worked. I could have been singing a completely different tune, I suppose. So that's a fair call out, absolutely, Mark. What would your top lesson be then?
So my top lesson would be to pick fit young guys, especially if you're bringing someone in. I just ended up, and I knew that I was putting myself into this situation, but I just ended up with people like Delidio and Boyd, and there's a couple of others as well, like McVeigh, just missing that one or two games late in the season, which really cost me. Like, my team stalled in the last sort of eight rounds because I just had too many premiums on the bench, and I guess that those guys were maybe responsible for that. So maybe a Zach Merritt type is maybe a better option to go for. Mm. And I think the thing that stood out for me that I really want to look out for again next year was Cade Simpson. I know that we were talking about him on the podcast saying, look, he's never averaged over 97. It's very, very unlikely that he would be able to do it this year. But then he actually increased his average by 10 points as a 33-year-old. And the reason behind that was a change in coach. So I think that a significant change in coach, which leads to a significant change in game plan, can actually lead to older players producing an outlier or big changes in score.
Yeah, and I don't think that that's something that you want to be punting on, but that's definitely something that we should be open to in terms of, you know, if we see a form line that looks different from something that we expect, maybe be more open to that breakout if they're in that specific scenario where they might have a role that has a little bit more reliance on them, to use the word that Jack used before, because they're definitely very reliant on Doherty and Simpson pushing them out of the halfback line this year. And that's something that we could have opened our eyes up to a little bit sooner. So,
The alternative to that is a Jared Waite situation where it's basically the same situation with him. It's just the scores are the outliers.
Yeah, I was surprised, Mark, to be honest, the amount of injury risk that you ended up taking this season, because I thought that was the same sort of lesson that we both learnt last season. And as you traded in, like, you know, the Rockcliffs and the... there were some players that you traded in late that I was a little bit surprised about. So, yeah, I think it's rare that you're more aggressive on the injury prone players than even I am, Mark, but I think you were this year. Donny, how about your top lesson learnt?
I've got a couple of lessons, mate. First one's probably pretty quick and probably the opposite of Faz, but similar to what you did, and that's don't be too cookie cutter. My team was very cookie cutter and I took probably minimal risk with it, I thought, but I had Brad Crouch as one of those risks, and yeah, clearly that didn't work out as well as I'd hoped. The other one in the ruck, I went for a bit of a unique in Sam Jacobs, and that didn't really work this year. He didn't have the good season. I was sort of hoping to go set and forget with Martin and Jacobs, and that just failed dismally for me. But, you know, it's one of those things, you couldn't see that coming. Well, I didn't think you could, hence why I did it. But, yeah, they were probably my letdowns. But the other lesson that I learned, and one thing that did work for me this year, normally I'm very, very particular about my starting squad and setting it up for the bye period, when that bye period was around sort of 10, 11, 12. Because the bye period was so late this year, I didn't actually worry too much about it in my starting squad. I thought, well, as I'm making those first five or six trades, I'll trade in ready for that bye period. And that's what I did. And, you know, my bye period went really, really well because of that. So I guess the lesson is, look at where the bye period is and then work your strategy around that rather than just planning for it up front.
I like that, Dunny. For me, it'd be back your gut. I think this year compared to last year, I have a lot less regret. And the big reason for that is last year, I would be worried about making the wrong decision and then sometimes almost be pressured to making the popular decision, which ends up sometimes being a bit reactive. And this year, I found that most of the players that I traded in, even if they didn't work out straight away, I backed them in to turn things around. I wasn't reactive, and they turned around. Even though they're not amazing players, you know, Pritis, Selwood, Gray, even Rance turned things around by the end of the season. I think we saw a lot of rookies turn things around as well. It's my lesson to be just to back your gut. There are times where I didn't back my gut, like I brought in McVeigh, even though I'm pretty sure, Mark, we were talking about it that week, and I said I was really, really not wanting to bring in old players, and it was McVeigh, Boyd, Simpson and Doherty. So Doherty was the only non-old player there, and so I was tossing up between Doherty and McVeigh, and I was scared of picking a young player that didn't turn out. I ended up picking an old player and regretting that. And if I just backed my gut, I think, yeah, sometimes that's the best thing. And you probably enjoy it a little bit more too, because you're not making decisions that you feel sort of pressured into making. So that would be my tip. I followed my gut on Bont, and that's probably my happiest selection for the year, to be honest. All right, we'll move on to the top starting pick for 2017 and top breakout pick for 2017. So these are a bit speculative, but thought it might be a bit fun to do. Faz, what do you reckon?
I'll get the obvious one out of the way for starting pick for Dangerfield, because even whatever he costs, I think he's worth it. He's that much of a gun. Yeah. Fife, if he's back from injury, would be a great pick. Paddy Cripps, as I said earlier, he's had his 1 week trial in my team and he's cut the mustard. Yep. Dane Beams, if he's back from injury, should have a handy discount.
Mm-hmm.
And then, despite him today deciding that he prefers Hawthorn to Essendon, Jaeger O'Meara can get himself out on the park.
Nah, after he made that decision, mate, his knees are stuffed.
I surely hope so, because Hawthorn have had their fair share of bargain buys in the past already, but he was listed at $316,000 in Supercoach this year and didn't play any games. So, you know, whatever his discount's going to be for next year, we've seen the talent that kid's got. So even with a shoddy knee, I think that's a good buy.
Mm-hmm. Donnie, how about yourself, mate?
Oh, yeah, clearly Danger becomes first pick now instead of Gaz for me and probably a lot of teams. I think Pendles, once again, probably another solid starting pick. I'll be taking Maxi Gawn is going to have to do basically fall over and snap in half not to make my starting squad next season. So they're probably the main guys that I'll be looking to start. One that I'd probably throw a bit of caution out there, and I'll ask the two Essendon boys in the room their thoughts. Zach Merritt will probably be a pretty popular pick with a lot of people, but obviously with guys like Heppel coming back, who I think could be a really good selection, what do you guys think that'll do to Zach Merritt?
I think that Zach won't be available as a forward, and that's going to obviously have a huge impact. Look, he's one of the best players in the league under 22, and he could... I mean, I was watching an interview with him tonight, and he was talking about how he's modelling himself on Dangerfield, and he's had contact with Salwood, and Judd's been mentoring him. And I really don't want to put a cap on this guy's ceiling. I understand that there's a lot of good players coming back, but I think that he could potentially be a top-line elite midfield Supercoach player going forward. So, like, I understand where your concerns are coming from, and I'm very, very unlikely to start him next year, but I definitely don't want to cap what my expectations on him.
No, and that's fair, mate. And probably the other one who may benefit from those guys coming back is Zaharakis, who won't have that tag that he really struggled with this season. You know, hopefully he can come back to some form if that tag starts going to Heppel next year.
Mark? Top picks for next year, starting and breakout?
Okay, so I'm going to go with, this probably sounds like a bit of a weird one, Goldstein. I think Goldstein obviously injured his knee really early on in the year and just managed to play out through the season. And I think that you might find next year that if he can get his body right, that he will turn out to be a really good pick, and he's going to be way cheaper than what we paid for him this year. The other one that really stands out to me would be Nathan Fyfe. I think, I mean, if he's got a full year's discount and he's 500,000, I think he'll be in 100% of teams. The breakout contenders for me, I've got a couple of midfielders. No one really stands out at this stage, but I'm looking at Heppel and Treloar. So both similar age players and may cop a bit of attention through tags next year. So if you're following Jack's advice, maybe not great picks, but I think that Treloar had a groin injury going into this year and has been hampered a bit throughout the course of the year, and if he gets a full preseason, that could really, really change things going into next year, and he is an absolute gun. And Heppel's just coming into that premium age of scoring and ability, and I don't think that the tag really worries Heppel too much. So, those two guys I think could be super elite premiums by the end of next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go with top starting pick being Gawn. I think Gawn Goldstein is going to be a fairly popular combo next year, unless something crazy happens or we get some big discount somewhere. Just set and forget rucks, and it's nice that I'm fairly confident we'll go into it next season with them. And it's nice to have that locked away and not have to stress too much about the Rucks, because we tend to have to overthink them.
Marcus, just on that one, would you consider a Gorn Grundy combination to start with?
Ooh, I do like Grundy.
Yeah, absolutely. But just because we've seen both Goldstein and Gorn go sort of, what is it, 118 plus, when we haven't seen that from Grundy, it'd be hard to step away from those two blokes. But absolutely, Grundy, of the Ruckman who are looking to step up, he certainly looks like the most likely next candidate. Most of the other blokes are a fair bit older. In terms of a breakout pick, I'm probably going to go with Bontempelli. Picked him last year, picked him this year, and I'm probably going to start him next year instead of picking up at the tail end of the season, although he seems to finish second half of the year really strong and then carry that form into the first half of next year. So hopefully, he's officially broken out into that 115 plus bracket, and we'll see him be a staple.
Let me get this straight, mate. He's a number four draft pick. He's potentially the most exciting young talent in the game, and you're claiming him as your own.
I'm claiming I picked him 2 years in a row, which you can't. Treloar would be the other one, and I also picked him this year, Mark, so we've got a bit of credits in the bank to give these two a thumbs up. I like midfielders who have really strong finishes to the season and who already show premium level scoring, and those tend to be safer breakout players. Instead of picking a Wines next year, I'd be looking to a Bont or a Treloar type instead. So. Don't want to make it crazy. Don't want to make it crazy.